Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, the podcast by filmmakers for filmmakers. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host, Jeff, as always. Jeff and I are writers and directors and passionate about the art of storytelling. Filmmaker Mixer is a creative hub where aspiring and established filmmakers come together to share experiences, insights, strategies, and inspiration.
And today we are chatting with the filmmakers behind the film, Baby. Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, and today we are chatting with James DiMartino, the director and producer of the film we're going to talk about today, and Llewellyn Michael Bates, the writer and co-producer of this new short film called Baby, which just screened at this year's Slamdance Film Festival. So, guys, welcome to the show. Was Slamdance the premiere?
Yeah, this was the world premiere of our short film, Baby.
Awesome. Well, James and Llewellyn, I'm anxious to talk about the film. I have to say, I really enjoyed your film. It's a very unique project, and I want to get into that. But let's start with you, Llewellyn. Tell us what Baby is about and explain to the audience where this idea came from.
So the Baby came from, I work in a theater called Roller Coaster Theater, which works.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I want to do a little deep dive into that as well. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I work for a place called Roller Coaster Theater, and we work with adults with mixed abilities. And then we were doing a play about dreams, and I was just asking everyone just casually what their dreams were, and a lot of people said they wanted to be in love. And then I thought, like, what would be the extension of that? And then so that's how the idea sort of sparked for Baby. And then also my sister was having a baby at the time. So I was looking at the differences between me having a hidden disability and then her not having any sort of differences about her, and then how our lives have been completely different. Baby to me is a movie that's about, like, following your hopes and dreams, no matter who you are or what you identify as.
Well, I want to talk more about the film, but before we do that, I'm curious how each of you got into storytelling and filmmaking, and how you got interested in it, how you turned that into your career. So, James, let's start with you. How did you get interested in filmmaking? What was your journey?
Yeah, so I guess it's been a long, long journey from when I was very young. I mean, I was always obsessed with watching films. I think when I got a bit older and found the style of a Quentin Tarantino film, it kind of really made me love cinema even more, you know, and that made me further look up other filmmakers and other films. And, you know, in high school, I was obsessed with always making a film. And I think one of the things I ran into is I was the only one really passionate about making a film at school and other people. And I had to try and make things in an environment that was like, well, everyone was mucking around. But what I was able to do from being very young is I was able to try and tell a story by editing it in such a way that even if everyone was mucking around, I'd still make a very competent, like, for what it was at the time. At being at school and being very young, I was able to make something which I think impressed a lot of my peers at the time because everyone was trying to sabotage it, you know. As I got older, which, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about this like the other day, as I got in more professional, that still happens, you know. Like, I feel at the indie level, there's always a lot of, there can be, when you don't have a good framework, a lot of like tension and chaos that can happen, and it's up to the director to really try and make it work.
Chaos on a film set, I'm shocked.
So as I got older, I wanted to start up a company. So I would have been 24 or 25 at the time now, and I decided to head into film. And because I was very passionate about it and I wanted to learn how to produce and make films. And so I started up Chapter 5 Studios, and I was able to band with my partner at the time, Daniel, he's an actor, and we banded together. He became a producer, and he was a good business. And to this day, he's still my business partner, and he helped make this film. But we started then, and we made about six short films in a year and a half or so. And those six films, they're all listed on my website. It was like our film school, put it that way. We We really had an intensive couple of years there where we made six short films, and we're very proud of the sixth short film we made, you know, like even though all of them made small festivals here and there. And the irony is that the very first short film I made was in a small film festival in Melbourne. That's where I met Llewellyn.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and in that festival, I was very new. Llewellyn had made a, and my film was made on like very little. It was like $70, I think. It was all I spent on my very first small short film. And Llewellyn had a very polished, really good film in the festival, and he actually won the festival. And
oh, wow.
You know, at the end of it, I just, you know, I was nice. I was like, you know, like, and we started talking, and then we built a friendship up. And it wasn't an immediate collaboration. I actually went on to make a feature film in 2018, self-financed and all done by myself, which was called The Faceless Man. It's actually available on Tubi and Amazon Prime to watch.
Oh, nice.
Free. And that was done in Australia. And that was and when I talk about chaos and not having a proper foundation yet, that was definitely me being quite young, 26, and really wanting to make a film, really wanting to make something my way. And I was able to get that vision realized and done. After that, I fell into a bit of a I didn't know what I wanted to do next kind of thing, and I started to realize that making a film was generally going to cost me 2 years of my life, or, you know, like it was, I wanted to make sure that the next big project that I do carries and has weight, or like, you know, has a way of getting up to be seen by a lot of people. And me and Llewellyn, we used to go to movies every now and then, talk about films all the time. And, you know, I was like, okay, what scripts do you have? And then he sent me one called City Assault, and I read it and I really enjoyed it. And I'm like, look, it's 5 minutes. We can do it in a day. So then COVID happened, set things back, COVID unhappened. And then what happened was, is that we had a short period of time. It would have been like maybe, we shot over a weekend, and then we shot the film, and then COVID happened again. So we got locked down again. So we were very lucky we shot the film in a very short period of time, but we didn't really give ourselves a lot of time to make this film. It was always a very small project. It was always intended to just be a really short film, like 4 minutes and a half, 5 minutes of credit. And that film did okay, but it kind of solidified our friendship together and being able to work through a project together. So after a while, Llewellyn kept showing me the script called Baby. And he kept, if we're going to do another project together, he said, let's do this.
And was this script finished at this point, or was it just in a development form?
Well, it was in development for a while, and it was a bit of back and forth. And when we saw the results of City of Salt, because City of Salt is a very like, we didn't really hold back with that movie. We decided to dial back the tone of Baby to be a film that anyone can watch. And I say that in terms of like, I would like my grandma to be able to come and see it and really enjoy it. That's the kind of mentality we had with, and being open to everyone to see it, like a PG rated film that right. Like everyone can see. And that's where the back and forth came. And then when I finally read a finished version of the script, I really realized how important it was to tell this film and tell it in the way that was from Llewellyn's ideas and my vision of how I wanted it to be. I was able to raise the finance for the film. And by doing that, we were able to keep all the elements of the script that made it fun, made it cool, made it like striking. I didn't really hold back. I used COVID as a time to really dig into film history and get better on some of the contemporary directors like, you know, Ingmar Bergman or Federico Fellini and Tarkovsky, and try and weave in some of their techniques into making our film. But yeah, I guess that's my overall journey to being here today. And I guess I've learned heaps, and I consider myself to continue learning on the film journey and just learning more things and trying to be the best I can.
You know, you never stop learning. I think people who really love storytelling and filmmaking, they're always studying. Well, Llewellyn, what about you? How did you get into filmmaking? How did it start? What inspired you as a kid? What were you interested in it as a child, a teenager? How did it start for you?
So it started when I was really young, because my grandfather was obsessed with like filming everything. in like all the boring things in, well, things that we considered boring when we were kids, like parties and stuff. And then when he was older, he had a stroke. So that was his way of like being creative. So he used to take a lot of pictures and movies, and then I was always inspired by that. And then I sort of just fell into writing because in high school, I wasn't very good at any of the other subjects except filmmaking, and I really enjoyed it. I've just been spending ages just learning how to write and developing the craft of writing. And then I've made a few short films that have been successful. And that's where it's got me to here, really.
Interesting. Well, circling back to your film, Baby, you had a great cast in Aaron Kearns and Michael Buxton. And I know, Llewellyn, as you mentioned earlier, you're involved with the Roller Coaster Theater. So I'm curious, I guess I have a two-parter. I'd like to know how you went about getting your cast, and also tell us a little bit more about Roller Coaster. I'd love to hear, you know, what that's all about.
I can start off with talking about how we got Aaron, and then Michael can talk, as Llewellyn can talk about how Michael, Yana, and I guess the Roller Coaster Company. So with Aaron, Llewellyn gave me the Back to Back Theatre, which is actually another company in Australia that deals with, like, a theatre company. And I emailed the owner of the founder of that, and she sent me two people, and one of them was Aaron. It was just a photo, and I'm like, look, Aaron looks very much like the Michaela of our film. Can you send us a screen test? And they sent us a screen test because it was very far away. There was like a lot of from where we were to the Back to Back Theater was a far route. So we
like how far are we talking about? How far away, like, was your?
I think it was 2 hours from where we were.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
So the screen test would save us a bit of time to, you know, get that in. And just saying, the screen test was amazing. It was great. I saw it and I'm like, look, this is I think as a director, for me, it's observing if actors are loved by the lens. That's how I see it. And when I see that and I see something special, I'm like, right, that's our person. And it was from that initial moment, I'm like, I think we got our Michaela right here. We ended up organizing a meeting with her mom and her at just a local cafe. And we just explained everything, you know. We just said, like, we need someone that's going to stay for the whole duration. Like, Erin's very first film. You know, she'd never done a film before. And she was very enthusiastic. I think the optimistic happiness that we saw in the character, I saw there in the cafe that day.
Interesting.
And that was almost like, you know, the start of the process. And that's how, she was very, you know, she's like, I'm going to do it. They live 4 hours away. So they made a big effort to come to set all the time. And that showed me that, yeah, that just very dedicated to the craft, dedicated to wanting to do it. But anyway, I'll let Llewellyn talk about how we found Llewellyn and Yana.
Yeah, so I used to work in a supermarket, and my coworker used to speak about his sister who was an actor, and he was like, she'll be really good for your film. And then I was like, well, I'll be the judge of that. And then we put her in one film, and then now she's been in four of my films. Now she's Yana Pandos is incredible to work with. She's an amazing natural actress with amazing nuances and a pleasure to work with. So I always try and give her a role whenever I can. And I met Michael Buxton. He was in a film that I made called Thomas Rides in an Ambulance. I just met him on set. I was talking to one of his supervisors that was there to help him. And I was like, oh, I'd like to join your theater company. Can I have an interview? And then I've been working there for the last 2 years. It's been really amazing. We really try and get the students to be empowered to tell their own stories and be expressive. And then we give them a framework.
Yeah, well, tell us more about Roller Coaster. I'm curious, you know, what the format is and what kind of productions you do. And you know, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So Michael Buxton's parents started Roller Coaster 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because they wanted, they saw that Michael was really talented, and they wanted to give him an avenue where he could be in a theater company. And then it started in somebody's house doing rehearsals. It's just grown bigger and bigger now. So we've done a lot of like theater productions mainly, and then a few short films, and also we have like lessons for like single students. I have a student named Matt who is making a ninja film, and I'm helping create the framework. Yeah, he's obsessed with ninja films, like really low budget, like English dubbed ninja films, and we're remaking one with him, starring him in like modern Australia with all the crazy camera techniques and stuff. But yeah, basically anybody.
That actually sounds really awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. We've been working on the script for a while, and next year I think we'll be able to film it because of COVID sort of got in the way too. It's great for anybody who wants to come and, you know, who's thinking about being an actor, who wants to be, you know, work in the film industry or learn how to make films. It's really great.
A lot of our listeners, are always interested in film festivals and the best way to promote their films at film festivals. And since you are both just fresh off the Slam Dance screening, I'm curious, I'm going to shift gears into promotion here. I'm curious, once you found out you were in Slam Dance, what steps did you take to promote the film and try to network with other filmmakers? Do you have any tips of what worked, what didn't work?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think we're right across the sea from in Australia. So we're very far from, America, very far from Park City, Utah, Slam Dance. So I guess going to, our childhood and stuff and hearing about Sundance, thinking about it in the sun, you know, obviously we're very wrong about that because it's dark of winter. So, and then hearing about Slam Dance, hearing about how Christopher Nolan came out of the festival, Sean Baker, you know, some of our heroes, even the Russo brothers as well, like of Slam Dance. Getting that acceptance email meant a lot to us, you know.
Sure.
Like, and it gave us the platform to showcase our film to a wide audience in America. And I think get interest from, and back home, people become more interest, I guess. That just seems to be in the Australian thing where you play overseas, you come back and everyone's like amazing, you know, because it's so far away. We're so far away from Park City. I think the first thing we wanted to do was encourage most of our core cast and producers to come. Because, you know, if me and Llewellyn had just been the only ones here, there would have been two people opposed to having a team of 10 here now.
Right.
You know? And it was really important to us to tell Michael and Aaron to come, to tell Yana to come, to tell Sarah Jennifer, my fiance, is another producer, to come here as well. And we also have the DOP, Alexander Norton, here.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but just for everybody to see it, you know, in that environment and at the premiere, I mean, that's an amazing opportunity.
It was. And to enhance that, we also hired a publicist, John Wildman, as well. And that was a decision that, well, we were actually, because going back a bit, we got a grant from Screen Australia, which is our funding body, as soon as we made Slam Dance. For travel and marketing, because we want to turn Baby into a feature. That's
right,
that's our intention. So to come to Slam Dance, it really gave that thing. And, you know, we were at one point, can't remember who, but we were advised that, you know, for a short film, a publicist is not really the best idea. But I actually disagree 100% with that, because John Wildman and Susan have done an amazing job on we've gotten so many reviews for short film. And I think we've got about 10, and each of them have been highly positive. With yesterday, we got a 9 out of 10 from Film Threat, where they actually stated that this is a film that you have to see.
Wow.
Coming from a short film perspective, I think it's very hard to get a short film reviewed. I know that back home, it's very, very rare. I mean, you're lucky to get maybe one, maybe. If you win a film festival back home, maybe one. So to have so many, and a lot of people have interest in talking to us. Many people are coming up to us after screenings, talking to us about the film. One person was in tears, crying and hugging Llewellyn after they saw a screening, because they actually had an association. I think one of their close family had Down syndrome, and they thought the film was so raw and so honest, you know. So
wow.
We wouldn't have any of that had we not come to Slam Dance, like none of it. Like we would have the things that we've had that have happened here to us, the conversations, the people that have seen us. We would just literally be the screen if none of us had made the attempt to be here. We're very lucky. I think Luella might want to add something as well.
Yeah, I have some advice to give your other fellow filmmakers is you've really got to pick the angle of your film that people will respond to emotionally when you're trying to get into a festival and when you're writing to the programmers.
Are you talking about what you're putting as your synopsis or are you talking about your cover letter?
Yeah, in your cover letter. I do it with the synopsis as well. It's like that's what people are going to connect with your film. They'll connect with the synopsis and then they'll connect with how emotionally it impacts them or what you're trying to say emotionally about your film. And then if you can get people to connect on that level, then it gives you a better chance of being screened at a festival.
Well, also
is my opinion.
Well, you know, pivoting over to the feature version of the film, because I know you want to develop it into a feature. Is that a script that you already have, or is that something you're trying to figure out? And the reason I'm asking is because I'm curious about the writing process. I'm curious about what your process was, if it is a feature script already, or what your process will be if you're turning it into a feature, to take that core idea and let it, you know, tease it out to, you know, 100-page script.
Yeah, so basically the script is in development now to make it into a feature film. And it's going to take the same arc of Baby the Short and then expand on it through each of the three main characters and then their individual dreams and then interconnect them. And then I think about the ideas that I write more than I write, if that makes sense. So like I've spent hours and hours like thinking about Baby the feature and then what I'm trying to say. And then when I feel it's like the right moment to write it, then I write it. And then I'm also big on like I structure out the whole movie and then try and write it. But then when I write it, I try and make it a surprise as well. So I'm following the same story beats, but then I'm like picking the things that like come to me as I write it that are surprising, which I think that the audience will either resonate with emotionally or visually, and sometimes both, depending on what I'm trying to do with the script. Me and James collaborate quite a lot, and then he gives me a lot of feedback about things that he likes or things that he doesn't like. And then because I trust him and love working with him so much, I'm then able to take what he says and then like reinvent it and then put it into the script as well.
It's not about the ego with me and Llewellyn, which is probably why we love working so much together. It's never like, it's not about, we want this person to play on the piano because it's our idea to give the actor more alliance. No, it's not about that at all. It's honestly about taking that ego away and how do we make the best film that we can make? How can we like basically make the best cinematic experience for people? And because we go into that mentality, if I say an idea and Llewellyn will say, well, I don't think it'll work like this, but then something else is said, like we come to an understanding very quickly if something works or not. And we're not upset if our ideas don't, or like Llewellyn and me won't say no to a great idea. If he comes up with me with a great idea, I'm like, that's fantastic, let's put it in. And we have that flexibility even while we're shooting, if that makes sense. So,
sure, sure. Yeah. Well, speaking of those kinds of, you know, spontaneous things that happen, sometimes it happens on the set as well. And I'm curious, were there any happy accidents on set that something came out either in a performance or an ad lib or, you know, something you didn't expect that wasn't in the script that you ended up keeping?
In terms of some of the dialogue from Dan Reeder's character played Steven, the one who smashes the mailbox at the start, like there was like, that was like a bit of improv and they had to scream at each other. And then Llewellyn might say, like, he goes to me, I have a great line for Dan. And the line was, that's not my scene. And I'm like, that's brilliant. Like, and I just got him to say, I just said that, are you happy? Can you say this line at some point? And he was like, great. And that was kind of like, I guess, a bit of a happy accident. I mean, Otherwise, I can't, like, I think the party scene, there was a lot of, because there were a lot of people around, we had to be flexible in changing that. And the opening shot too, there had to be a bit of flexibility because the whole film was storyboarded, by the way. My fiance, Sarah, Jennifer Ducci, basically, she storyboarded the whole film for me. So after I drew my little shitty stick figures and she went on to redraw them professionally.
Well,
so
well tell
we
us about that. Tell us about that opening shot, because that was interesting.
Yeah, so the opening shot was always intended to be a long take, because when people come and watch a James DeMartino movie, I want them to be welcomed to an interesting long take shot that basically introduces you to the film, almost like a prologue, you know, of a book, basically. That's how I see it. And that goes back to my feature film. We open with a 9-minute long take, and I've come a long way since then to, like, it doesn't have to be that long, but as long as it's like 2 minutes, but a lot of things happening is for me, that's still a long take, that, you know, and it took a long time to prep. So Llewellyn always had the idea for a car crash, and I'm always like, well, how about we put the car crash in the film and we, like, and we do it in the long take, and, you know, everyone's like, cut the shot. And it took a while for me to convince Llewellyn, nah, let's do it, it's going to be amazing if we can pull it off. And, like, there was a lot of prep that went into that. We got an amazing Steadicam operator, Lewis Puller, to be the Steadicam operator. He's done a number of things. And we got Alex, our DOP, on board as well. Everyone does say cut the shot, though. Like, it's kind of frustrating to the point where it's like, yeah, we can make it easier by cutting this and cutting that. And it's like, and I think that's where it's important that, as a director, I keep the vision and essence of what I want, and not be easily persuaded by other people's opinions of making the job easier for them. I know that sounds quite like, you know, like a blunt response, but I really do believe that that's initially why working on an independent film set anyway, why people will say it's easier to just cut it. Because I know 100% it's easier to cut the shot. Llewellyn knows 100%. It's easier to cut the shot. It's easier for everyone.
And when you say cut the shot, I just want to be clear. You're not talking about taking the scene out. You're talking about cutting it up to make it move tighter. Is that what you mean?
Yeah,
well, just no. Easier to film, basically.
Yeah, instead of it being a one take, we'll cut it here, then move the camera over here, then cut it there.
Okay,
we'll go
I
into
gotcha.
A close-up. Yeah. So everyone's saying we can cut it to make it easy, right? Like, you know, do it in 3 or 4 shots instead of one. And so that's why it's important. It was important for me to get that across. And when you're dealing with actors with intellectual disability, like Aaron, you're kind of throwing a spanner into uncharted territory where we have to make sure that she's able to go through the path. And that required a bit of rehearsal, but Aaron was a real trooper and amazing. And, you know, we did all the rehearsal. Everyone was really, I guess, pumped, excited. We even had the film actually starts on a crane and comes down. And the Steadicam operator was in a crane and comes down, and, you know, we made sure to rehearse the whole scene and go through it. But look, it was we did it in three shots. We smashed the car 3 times, and the third time was the best smash. And everything just, I think it was definitely when we smashed it and we got that smash on the third shot that basically we were just jumping up and down like that we did it, you know. So, and we dedicated a whole day to it too. That helped a lot. So we had to get the permits across the road. Like, all in all, that day cost us, you know, $10,000 to get that done, like, the way we wanted, by having the whole day, you know.
Well, so, you know, in terms of cutting up the shot, or, you know, that scene in multiple shots, I get that. But for me, you know, doing it in one long take, it's not just about telling the story, but it's setting the tone of the film, in my opinion. You know, you're creating sort of a real world scenario where it's, you know, you got, you know, people observing, you got this chaos going on, you got this out of the blue car coming in, and it kind of sets the tone of a somewhat unpredictable story, which I think is interesting. So yeah, I think you made the right choice.
You know, we and Llewellyn and Sarah were talking about this today, and we're like, that, you know, the whole metaphor of the film, the craziness of the situation, is summed up in that long take.
Right, right,
that,
right.
But But the accident is a metaphor for the baby being an accident coming at the same time. So there's a lot of like very, there's a lot of symbolism in the film. And I think that it takes maybe two, you know, it can take two viewings to get everything, you know, to understand it, you know. So, one more thing I will say is I had someone the other day try and tell me you didn't have to do the car crash in the film. And look, I think that just, and I've explained my rationale and why I wanted it in. But what I want to add is if you give this script to 10 different people, you're going to get 10 different versions of the film. And no two people are going to make the film the same way. This is my version of the story, as true as I could get to Llewellyn's script.
Well, I'm curious, we talked about happy accidents. You know, every film is different, but, you know, films can be challenging for different reasons. What do you think the most challenging part? Well, let's start with you, Llewellyn. What do you think was the most challenging part in writing the script? And then back to you, James, maybe the most challenging part of turning that script into the film. Let's start with you, Llewellyn. Was there anything in the script that, you know, that was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome to tell the story you wanted to tell?
I just didn't want the script to be preachy.
I wanted the
characters to be seen as just like any other actor, like main actors. So it was really important to me that like all sort of all the exposition and then everything that would usually be very preachy in another film would be honest and true to this film, and that I wouldn't do a disservice to people with intellectual disabilities. That was the most important thing for me to get through to the audience.
No, that makes sense. I think the problem when you get too preachy in I'll put it this way. I worked with a really good producer developing some TV work, and there were moments where he'd say, he'd tell me, I don't want to hear the writer. I want to hear the characters. And I think that can be the challenge. If you get too preachy, now suddenly the audience is hearing the writer talking and not hearing the character speaking. So that was smart. I think that's a good choice. What about James, in terms of production? Any big challenges?
Yeah, I mean, well, definitely the opening long shot was really challenging. And, you know, I thank my fiance Sarah for really, you know, motivating me and you know, encouraging me the morning of, because that's definitely the hardest part. And that was real challenging because I wanted to ensure that we got it. You know? A lot of money was on the line for that one day. So that was really stressful.
And just to have context, you said you did that one shot in one day. What? How many days was the whole shoot?
It was a 10-day shoot.
10 days, okay. And, so 1/10 was on your first shot.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
About a bigger chunk of the budget.
Yeah. The other challenges came from, I really wanted the acting to be as authentic as it could be, and that stemmed from every actor. So having that flexibility on the shoot days allowed me to just keep going on takes, you know. I'm lucky that everyone we chose for the film was really on it, you know. So like Yana has a lot of film experience, and every other actor that was in it we had worked with before, pretty much. So we knew who we were going with. In terms of really stressful things, the birth scene was definitely something that, for me, I did a lot of research on and spoke to a lot of people, a lot of nurses, and I just wanted to ensure a couple of things. I wanted to ensure that it looked as authentic as it could. I wanted to look like a proper birth scene, because I see a lot of films skip over it or make it very quick, and it's not generally a quick process. From some people I spoke to, it can be, but there are complications and it takes time. And so I spent a lot of time looking at a lot of videos referencing films, but I found that quite challenging because not many films have good birth. That's a harsh criticism from my behalf, but there wasn't really much I could really go to. And so that was quite, and we needed a really good location, and they that location that only let us shoot in that hospital theater room for like, I think it was, we got a 4-hour block and we had to get everything in that time.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's tight.
And I think in terms of Aaron and Michael, I pushed them as hard as I could. I pushed them as hard as I pushed any other actor, because to me they're actors, you know, they're right. like anyone else. And it was really funny because when I saw Michael's mum, I pushed Michael as hard as I could, and she goes, "Good, it's good you pushed him hard." And so, you know, I think it was they trust us a lot, both of them, and they love working with us. And if Michael has to do something or Aaron has to do something, you know, 5-8 times, they'll keep doing it, and they get better each time that they do it. And yeah, I guess that was, to me, what was really challenging. I mean, there's other challenging things when I feel like you're dealing with a bit of conflict and getting your vision across correctly, because I feel like when you do something new or you're working with something new, there's always someone that asks you why. And this is something that David Fincher even, he said, someone's always going to ask you why, no matter how many accolades you have. And the why question is really important. And like, when you're not just sticking to standard, and I hate just standard shots, I love shot variety in a way that tells a story perfectly. And that's just something that I've had to navigate, and like, just really like, we have, for instance, we had the actual baby we had for, we could only use the actual baby for 4 shots in the, or 5 shots in the film, because it was going to go to sleep, and it was luckily awake and not crying when we had it. But we got 5 shots, and it was just about, okay, we have maybe perhaps 6 shots planned, but we need to get 5, and we only have one more now, which is the most important one to get. And those are what I call hard calls on my behalf, and we have to go this way, or we have to have this shot in the film, we have to. And that was quite stressful, I guess. Well, that was quite like, you know, we only have X amount of time, we have to get it. The ending shot too, we were dealing with another baby who just kept crying. So we did about 9 shots, and he cried the whole time. And we got one moment in the best shot, in the sun at the twilight, which is, I love the twilight hour. I love shooting in that golden magic moment. We got one moment, one time that came out perfectly, where he was initially crying, but then Michael's dancing and he stopped crying. And then we're like, happy accident is, you have a baby, it's going to cause you incidents, but they can deal with it. And that's basically, you know, like, and it stopped, he stopped crying and he was just looking at Michael, and, you know, that ended up being the best shot. And wow. And that was, I guess, just a happy accident, because at the time we were really stressed. We were like, we need him to just stop crying for just one moment, you know, for one time. And yeah, so that's basically it.
Well, guys, it's a great film. It's very touching. Big congratulations on your Slam Dance premiere. I think you're going to have a lot of success with the film. And I'm very curious to see how you develop this into a feature and what that feature is going to be like. I think it's going to be exciting. So congratulations to the both of you. And before we go, please let people know how they can find you, find your work. Do you have a website or an Instagram page? How can people find you?
Yeah, so look, I'm contactable on my website. Chapter 5 Studios is essentially what I run all my films through. So if you want to contact me, just chapter5studios.com.au, and all my contact details are there.
And what about you, Llewellyn?
If you want to contact me, you can just search Llewellyn Michael Bates into Google, or go to www.llewellynbates.com.au.
Awesome. Well, as you develop the short into a feature, or as you take it out to other film festivals, please circle back. We can chat some more about the success of the film.
Yeah, we'd love to do that.
All right. Well, you take care, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping, and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on, and stay tuned for future episodes.